This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Stephen Colbert has fulfilled the dream of every fake news correspondent to host his own fake news program. The Colbert Report premiered in October and airs Monday through Thursday on Comedy Central right after The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Stewart serves as an executive producer of The Colbert Report. Stephen Colbert had been a senior correspondent on The Daily Show, best known perhaps for his regular segment This Week in God. His character on The Colbert Report is a parody of patriotic, confrontational cable TV hosts. In the opening credits, we see him looking very self-important, waving a flag as a bald eagle flies overhead. Here's an excerpt from the first edition.
But this show is not about me. No, this program is dedicated to you, the heroes. And who are the heroes? The people who watch this show. Average hard-working Americans, you're not the elites. You're not the country club crowd. I know for a fact that my country club would never let you in. But you get it. And you come from a long line of it-getters. You're the folks who say, something's got to be done. Well, you're doing something right now. You're watching TV. On this show, your voice will be heard in the form of my voice. Because you're looking at a straight shooter, America. I tell it like it is. I calls them like I sees them. I will speak to you in plain, simple English. And that brings us to tonight's word. Truthiness.
Stephen Colbert, welcome back to Fresh Air. I love the show. Congratulations on it.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk about your character, the Stephen Colbert who hosts the Colbert Report. How would you describe him?
He is passionate. He is closely attached and invested in the stories he's talking about and in the themes that he's talking about. He cares deeply about what happens in this country. And he just doesn't know a lot about what happens in this country. And so he gets little glimpses of things. He has little snatches of information, and then he makes broad generalizations based upon that. Here's that Verizon is going to not give the pensions they promised to some of their workers. And he goes, that sounds like a good idea. You know, pensions, what's that? That's just privatized communism.
And so that's why, because he doesn't really understand everything, that's why he's into truthiness instead of
right. Truth. He's not a huge fan of facts, I said before, like it's really more about what you feel in your gut. It makes sense that the world is flat and that the sun goes around us. I look up, I see the sun move. I don't see us move. You know what? Occam's razor says the sun moves. Simplest answer is usually the true one.
The truthiness editorial that we opened with, I think it's really brilliant at describing how some political hosts on cable relate to the audience. There's a sense of like you flatter the audience, you seduce the audience, and then you insult the people you see as your opposition.
Exactly.
In the hopes that you've won over the audience. They're on your team, and now you can just like go after your enemies.
I mean, one of the sort of unintentional puns of our show is that it's called the Colbert Rapport. And it plays, unintentionally, it plays on the word rapport, R-A-P-P-O-R-T, which is, a sense of understanding between the speaker and the listener. We're the same people, you and me, we get it. The rest of those people out there, they don't understand the things we understand. The show is like an invitation to the audience to be part of the club. Come over here with the cool kids. It's kind of a frat mentality.
Right. And you not only love your country, you love yourself.
Well, absolutely. I mean, by loving by loving myself, I am loving my country because I'm one of the country.
one of the people you've patterned yourself on in the Colbert Report is Bill O'Reilly.
Papa Bear.
What's your take on him?
He's a magnificent performer. I don't know if he... My take on him is I don't actually know whether he believes everything he says, other than the fact that people are attacking him. I think he believes that he's a victim. of some sort of conspiracy to take him down because he doesn't toe the party line on things. But I think he's an entertainer, you know, and I think he's extremely entertaining. I mean, I watch the way he talks and I just think, God, I wish I could capture some of that, that self-assurance. The ability to talk about anything is something we're trying to capture on the show. I mean, the show's still in its in its infancy. We've done 23 shows at this point. But he can talk about anything, and it's important because he's talking about it. And that is something we're working very hard to capture on the show because it'll allow me to talk about anything I want to talk about and not have to be so tied to what the news cycle is, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
You've even gotten some of his mannerisms, too. I think the way he uses his hands. You've done that no-spin finger twirl.
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's good. Yeah, well, it's very invasive. You know, it's right toward the camera. He's an imposing presence. And I'm not six. He's like 6 foot. I think he's 7'4". He's an enormous guy. And I'm not. So I'm trying to do everything I can to get that sort of imposing quality he has.
What else have you noticed about the way he makes his arguments when he takes a stand?
I mean, I think very often he prefaces his arguments by saying, you're not going to hear this from anybody else, or I'm not going to make any friends by saying this, or they don't want me to say this to you. They don't want you to hear this, but this is what I'm going to tell you, and I'm looking out for you, you know, as if everything he's doing is completely altruistic and only for the good of the audience. And that's a wonderful attitude to have because it establishes trust between you and your subjects.
Bill O'Reilly's website has a list of media operations that have, quote, regularly helped distribute defamation and false information supplied by far-left websites. The New York Daily News...
About him, right? About him. Like, he has a list of, like, he's a hit list for people who have said things untrue about him. One of which is the New York Daily News that he has a column in. So, which is a wonderful little dissonance there.
Yes, he names the New York Daily News, the St. Petersburg Times, and MSNBC as the worst offenders. And he says, in the months to come, we expect to add more names to this list. We recommend that you do not patronize these operations and that advertisers do the same. They are dishonest and not worth your time and money. Will you be starting a defamation list?
We've already got ours out there. The Patterson Springs, North Carolina, Picayune, we're going to take down. The Edgefield Advertiser from Edgefield, South Carolina. I've had a problem with them ever since they didn't back Strom Thurmond, hometown boy back in 1954. And yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That sense of victimization is just wonderful for the character because it allows you to be both a champion and a conqueror and a victim at the same time. I mean, you got all your bases covered.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Stephen Colbert, and he now hosts The Colbert Report, a new fake news program right after The Daily Show on Comedy Central. In our first interview, you explained that you patterned your senior correspondent reporter on The Daily Show. You patterned him in part on two people, Stone Phillips and Geraldo Rivera. So I was delighted to see that your first guest on The Colbert Report was Stone Phillips.
Oh, me too. It was like he was smashing a metaphorical bottle of champagne across our figurative prow.
And you know, you explained when you were on the show the last time that one of the things you borrowed from Stone Phillips was the sense of gravity. You know, when he reads something, it is important. And so,
absolutely.
So you did this kind of gravitas reading of headlines with him, and I'd like to play an excerpt of that.
Stone and I will now, may I call you Stone?
No.
Mr. Phillips and I will now read random snippets of news copy to show you that if you possess sufficient gravitas, what you are saying doesn't have to mean anything at all. Before we begin, I want to make it clear that even though Mr. Phillips and I are trading lines back and forth, this is in no way a competition. But I also want to assure the audience that it's perfectly all right to applaud for whomever you think is winning. Let the gravitas begin.
Tonight, shocking revelations in the case of an Ohio school principal whose filing cabinets held gruesome secrets.
Then, with night falling and just one flare left, would Armando be able to keep the coyotes away from his leg?
If you have ever sat naked on a hotel bedspread, we have got a chilling report you won't want to miss.
Raheed and MC Fresh Jams were dropping mad beats at the house party when tragedy struck.
We invited Mother Teresa to respond to these charges.
That's Stephen Colbert and Stone Phillips in an excerpt of the Colbert Report. Those sounded like real headlines to me. Those were so bad they sounded real. Were they real?
I wish they were, Terry. No, those were just ones we wrote for the occasion.
So did Stone Phillips know when you invited him on that you patterned part of yourself on him?
Yes.
Was he honored
or
offended?
He seemed like a very good sport about it. I think honored might be too strong a word. I think he was game to play along.
We've talked a little bit about Stone Phillips and Bill O'Reilly, other newsmen or pundits who you feel like you've been borrowing from on the Colbert Report.
Obviously, I would like to look as crisp as Anderson Cooper. He is so put together. Brilliant blue ties and sort of a silver jacket. And I'd love that salt and pepper. It's really almost all just salt hair. I'd love to have his look. Let's see. Lou Dobbs, I love, like, he rides the same hobby horse all over the place, like Our Broken Borders or The Outsourcing of America. And he does no problem reporting on the same story over and over and over again. It really cuts down on having to think of new things. We're hoping to steal some of that. Hannity is great. He's so bullheaded, you know. He can just stampede over his guests in ways that even O'Reilly doesn't. And the lost, lamented Aaron Brown, who is no longer on CNN. Anderson Cooper took over for his slot. But Aaron Brown, I think he's a great source of metaphor and mulling. You know, I've said before that nobody mulls the news like Aaron Brown. He would just, suck the flavor out of every word. Now that Katrina has swept through these infested swamps in southern Louisiana, what gators roam down there now, be they political or be they real, sunning themselves on the rocks of the tragedy of others? He could spin a metaphor for half an hour.
Let's talk about something that you do every night on the show, which is The Word. And why don't you explain what this feature is?
Every night on the show, at least every night so far, we do, or I do, an essay based upon a single word. The first night, as you know, in the beginning of the show, was truthiness. And, for instance, recently we did one called Xmas, which was about the war on Christmas. And on the left side of my screen, it has bullet points based upon what I'm saying in my essay. I'm speaking a completely self-sufficient, standalone essay, hopefully comedic, and on the left side of the screen is giving bullet points that are excerpting parts of what I've said or commenting on what I just said. And the bullet points end up being their own character. Sometimes they're reinforcing my argument, sometimes they're sort of countermanding my argument, but it's sort of a textual addition of jokes or satire to the verbal essay I'm doing at the moment.
You did your editorial this week on the war against Christmas, and you've been hammering that for a while on the show.
Absolutely, yeah. There are only 80% of America is Christian, and so they're clearly a persecuted minority, and they've got no power here other than the president, the Congress, and the state legislatures. But other than that, these are helpless people who are being denied their right to say Merry Christmas to each other. And I think it's time to do something about it. As O'Reilly said on his show last night, what people want when they go into a discount store like Target is to see Merry Christmas up there. Then they want a dozen tube socks for $1.99. But first, they want to see Merry Christmas up there. That's why they're going to that store. Okay? You listening, Target? You're on the list. Watch out. The oddest thing is that this is asking for the commercialization of Christmas. They're asking stores to say Merry Christmas in their advertising. When didn't the Charlie Brown Christmas special tell us we weren't supposed to do that?
Do you feel that what you're doing is like a potent form of not only like news critique but media criticism?
Well, it definitely is more heavily media than news. John and The Daily Show is more news. I mean, they're really tied to the daily news cycle. And while we are to a certain extent, our goal is for this, you know, eventually to have the kind of viewership or weight that we can actually lead the news cycle the way O'Reilly does. You know, he determines what's going to be talked about on that show. This is what's bugging him today. And in a way, that's more satire about what the media does than about what's happening in the news.
You know, as you said, one of the differences between what you're doing on your show and what Jon Stewart does on The Daily Show is that he's talking about the news. You're mostly satirizing the media that covers mm-hmm. the news, particularly mm-hmm. the TV media. And you have to stay in character during the whole show. I mean, Stewart can go in and out of character, but you have to stay in it, and you have to completely carry the show. Like, you're on camera every second except for the moments that your guest of the evening isn't on. You don't have reporters in the way that he does. So seems to me it's
I think the correspondents are really a drag on a program. I'm against them.
They just take away airtime from you.
They really do.
Yeah. But so that's really a lot to carry. It seems, I mean, you seem to be enjoying the show so much. But stepping back from that, I think it must be really like a lot of work to carry that.
It is a lot of work, but I'm not complaining because, you know, all a performer wants is to perform more. Now, we need to figure out a way to do it that's humane for the people who work on the show. I mean, right now, I mean, I have two wonderful head writers, Rich Dom and Allison Silverman, and Allison stayed up till 4 o'clock last night working on tonight's show.
Right.
And actually working on tomorrow's show. And so right now, it's a little bit like a forced march to get the show done every day. Because we're essentially writing we have a guest who's there for maybe 5 or 6 minutes. But even that is a prepared moment, not for the guest, but for me, because I have to establish what my character's take is on that person's work or on their writing or what they represent. You know, if they have somebody like iconic on, like Leslie Stahl from like the mainstream media. So it ends up being like a 22-minute monologue we're writing every night. And I think probably that's an unsustainable level of script output. And, you know, we're finding different ways to, you know, push away from me. And but it's a slow process.
Did you take any of the writers from The Daily Show with you when you started the Colbert Report?
One, as as a loner. And Eric Drysdale is a great guy, and I've been with him for years. And he knew the voice of the character I did at The Daily Show and helped sort of, you know, leaven that voice into the rest of the writer's work. And John very, you know, graciously saw how good Eric was for my show, and Eric wanted to stay, so he's staying at the show. And he also plays Bobby, my stage manager.
Oh, I was always wondering if that was an actor or a writer or the real stage manager.
That's
very
Eric Drysdale. He's very funny. He's a great guy.
Well, Jon Stewart is an executive producer of your show. So mm-hmm. how involved has he been in the development of it?
He's given me a lot of advice on which tie knot to go with.
That's important.
I was going to go with a Windsor or a double Windsor, but then he said no, go with a four in hand. It's much cleaner. John's invaluable resource for me because the job of being a host is also the job of being a manager and executive producer and setting the agenda and trying to see the big picture of the show because. You know, his show and my show, even though it's still evolving, is more than just a series of things put together. Hopefully there's some sort of coherence for me of the character or of a theme for the evening or some relationship to the guest of the evening. And many's the time I've called him and said, how would you do this? You know, how do you both manage people and be a performer at the same time? Because it's a new skill for me to learn.
Stephen Colbert is the host of The Colbert Report, Monday through Thursday nights on Comedy Central. Here's an excerpt from last night's episode.
I want to congratulate a good friend of the show, Congressman Tom DeLay. That good-looking fellow was victorious today. A Texas judge threw out one of his indictments. Turns out, conspiring to take state corporate donations, route them through political action committees, and then funnel them back to candidates for state Congress was not illegal when he did it. Super illegal now. But that means he's off scot-free, except for the two money laundering charges that still stand. Of course, you won't hear about Tom's good news in the mainstream media. They prefer to paint him as some kind of criminal. The sad thing is, people are listening. There's a new poll out of his home district. Given the choice between DeLay and an unnamed Democrat, 49% would vote for the unnamed Democrat. Of course, unnamed Democrats traditionally do better than named Democrats. So, don't take those district poll numbers too hard, Tom. They'll come around. Trust me. I know how to romance a district. Tonight, Americans are living longer and dying poorer. You should have thought of that before you lived longer. Then I'll sit down with Representative Jim Moran. Yes, Virginia's 8th district, you do have a congressman. Plus, Anderson Cooper is here to tell us how he can look so good standing in 3 feet of sewage. And ABC named their new anchors. CBS, you're the last one with a shot at this. Move over, Oprah. Tonight, every member of my audience receives a priceless gift. The truth. This is the Colbert Report.
That's the opening of last night's edition of The Colbert Report, the fake news show hosted by my guest, Stephen Colbert. It follows The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, Monday through Thursday nights on Comedy Central. Colbert is a former senior correspondent for The Daily Show. Let's get back to our interview with Stephen Colbert. As we mentioned, you do an interview every night on the show.
Right.
And you're in character, and of course, the guest has to be themselves. Do they have any idea of what to expect?
I tell every guest, I go back and I meet the guests beforehand. Obviously, I thank them for being on the show because I can't believe how lucky we get the people we do. And I say, now, you are aware that I am a professional idiot, yes? And so far, all of them have said, yes, I'm aware of that. And I go, okay, well, let's have some fun out there, you know? And that's it. That's the entire conversation we have. So other than that, it's a free-for-all.
Well, let me play an interview that that you recently did with Congresswoman Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick of Detroit, from Michigan. And this is an excerpt from which you're talking about Hurricane Katrina.
Carolyn.
Let me read you a quote from Bill O'Reilly.
O'Reilly said, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina should be taught in every American school. If you don't get educated, if you don't develop a skill and force yourself to work hard, you'll most likely be poor. And sooner or later, you'll be standing on a symbolic rooftop waiting for help.
Chances are that help will not be quick in coming. Why didn't those people on the rooftop stay in school?
How do you know they didn't stay in school? I think many of them stayed
O'Reilly
in school.
I think O'Reilly here says that
O'Reilly,
they should have.
O'Reilly, come on.
He says they should have stayed in school.
How does he know? Many of them stayed in school.
You don't believe it?
No, I believe he said it. Everybody on the roof was not someone who had not gone to school.
Right. But I guess his point is that they should have stayed in school. That's his point.
Okay.
Yeah. Why didn't they?
Some did.
Okay.
Many did.
All right.
Many stayed in school.
But he's saying that they didn't.
I'm telling you, many did.
Okay, but he's saying that they didn't.
That's an interview from The Colbert Report. That was Stephen Colbert interviewing Congresswoman Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick. I think that was a very funny interview.
Funny or insightful, Barry?
Insightful.
I nailed her. To me and O'Reilly nailed her together. All right? I'd see to get up from that.
What did she say to you when the show was over? Did you talk with her about the interview afterwards?
Well, that was an interview I did actually at Capitol Hill. I went down to her office Capitol.
Okay.
And I interviewed her there. And I don't know. We're doing a 435-part series called Better Know a District about every district, a congressional district in the United States. And we've done 7 of them so far. And she's the 6th one in that series. And she had seen me interview other members of Congress, you know, on the air, and I don't know what she expected. What we did was not what she expected. But it's amazing. Congress people are just like most people. They've got a pretty good sense of humor about themselves. I mean, we laughed and shook hands when it was over.
How did you come up with the idea to do a series of interviews on each of the congressional districts?
Well, that was necessity being the mother of invention, because when we first started trying to book people on the show, long before the show went on the air, our booker, Emily Lazar, who's a wonderful booker, she booked for CNN for years before she came over to us. She said, well, people are afraid to talk to you. You know, no one will talk to you in Washington, D.C. And I said, you're kidding. Well, who would talk to me? You know, because we were going after big people and they were afraid they were going to get Ali G'd, you know, sort of ambushed. by me with questions. And I said, well, who would talk to me? I mean, God, there's got to be somebody down there who's hungry enough to talk to a reporter like me. And she said, well, you know, members of Congress, but nobody you'd ever know. And I said, that's fine. Let's get to know them. Let's lead with who will talk to us. So we looked at the list of the people who were willing to talk to us, you know, like these eight to 10 people out of the 435. I mean, obviously, she didn't call that many. And I said, okay, here's the deal. We're going to do a series called Get to Know Your Congressman. And I'm going to take these people to task on, like, minute social issues of their area. Like, you know, what about the senior center that's being built over in Klamath Falls, you know? And then we said, no, why don't we just make the entire series about districts and make the congressman just part of it? That way we'll have an entire act to the show. So we really built backwards from who would talk to us, and it turned out the only people who would talk to us were all congressmen. So, you know, we retroactively created a game to make them fit, which, you know, it just shows you the value of restricting your options.
I one of the things I like about this interview is I think it was a great critique of a certain type of interview. Can you talk about that?
What do you mean?
Oh, of having like a false premise and sticking to it and kind of
like saying I've got a point to make here, and regardless of the fact that in your first response to my point, you completely deflate my point. But you don't let go of your point.
Exactly.
Like, you know, well, why didn't they stay in school? They did stay in school. Okay, then why didn't they?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a game I love to play. I interviewed some people in Saratoga Springs, New York, years ago, who a printing error in the town hall killed every member of the town. Everybody who worked for the town died because instead of saying like married or single, it said deceased. Everyone in the town was listed as deceased on a tax form. And so I swooped down to the town and I said, what killed everyone? It's like, well, no one died, Mr. Colbert. It just, there was a printing error and that is what killed everyone. there's no one dead. And why the rage? Why the grief? There's no grief. No one's grieving over these deaths. That's very callous. No, no one actually died. Then why the deceased column being checked there? It was a printing error. Mm-hmm. Has anyone gotten rid of this printer? And sticking to a story you have to get, I think, is probably something that reporters would recognize, because sometimes I'm sure, certainly was for us at The Daily Show and is for me now, you've got to come back with a story. And if all you've got is the story you've decided on before you went out, well, that's all you're going to stick to. You're not going to listen to what somebody says, because you've got to bring back the bear.
And speaking of bear, you're really into bears on the show.
No, I'm not into bears.
You're not into, Jerry. You're opposed to bears.
They're a danger. They want our honey and our picnic baskets.
Where did this bear thing come from? Is it from the Colbert?
No, it isn't. I've had a fear of bears since I was a kid. I used to be afraid of being mauled by bears. My father was a doctor, and I used to think of like, God, they can do amazing things in modern medicine. And I don't know why I think this way. They can do amazing things in modern medicine. And even if I were mauled by a bear, they probably could save my life. And in my head, I've always, since I was a child, I've had this specter of being mauled by a bear. as like the worst thing that could happen to you.
Did you live near bears?
No, I grew up on coastal South Carolina. There's not a bear for 250 miles.
With the exception of the zoo.
In my kid, when I was a kid, I thought the woods were full of bears, raccoons and bears. And I dream about bears. They're after me. They're after me. They're between me and something I want. I see bears. They're dancing bears, but I know that if I get close enough to them, they'll turn into Kodiaks.
You know, there's been a lot of like steamy novels by political people in the news. Like Bill O'Reilly has one. Louis Libby has one, and you have one. You have.
I have Stephen Colbert's Alpha Squad 7, Lady Nocturne, a Tech Jansen adventure.
Yes,
it's about it's about this guy named Tech Jansen. And he's a member of Alpha Squad, of which there are 7 members. And he has adventures. He's really a surrogate for me. His adventures are really my adventures.
Absolutely. I'm sure of that. There's actually an excerpt of one of your novels on the Colbert Report fan site.
Yes.
And if with your permission, I will read a paragraph.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't have explained the character if you just read it, because the character is self-explanatory once you hear his voice.
Okay.
You've got to read the chapter title, too.
Okay, the chapter title is Abraxia's Gambit. And Abraxia is an attractive woman who is in a character.
Alien.
Alien, yes.
Alien, but female alien. Large-breasted female alien.
So I'm going to read the last paragraph of this excerpt. What took you so long, cooed Abraxia, her words subtly quavering with the universal inflections of desire. Ignoring my own fierce need, I furiously scanned my surroundings for danger. She was crafty, and I knew that the slightest mistake would prove fatal, not just for myself, but for the entire United Alliance. Inevitably, my gaze settled back on the smooth curves of skin that peeked out from under her transparent holo dress. How many rounds of Uranian megasex would it take before she surrendered the alloy? It's so great.
Well read. Do you do books on tape?
No.
Because we're looking for a reader for our book on tape. First, we're looking for a publisher, then a reader for our book on
right.
tape.
Oh, and I should mention,
I don't know why publishers aren't beating down my door.
Right. Well, hasn't
a
this
whole
Tech
series
Jensen,
of Alpha
right.
Squad 7? A whole series of Alpha Squad 7 books? Wouldn't that be great? You know, they'd be slender. They'd be novellas. But I bet you we could pump them out.
Have you tried to, like, get the Lewis Libby book, which is being republished, but in the meantime
oh,
it's cost hundreds
it.
Of dollars? You have it.
Oh, we have. We have two copies of the Lewis Libby book. I think we came in right before the artificial bubble on the Lewis Libby book inflated. Because as soon as he was indicted, we bought the book that night. And then we paid, you know, I don't know, $30 or something. But the next day it was like $500.
So have you read it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, about... bear rape. That was one of my favorite parts about a Japanese whoremongers enticing a bear to be sexually aroused by poking its genitals with a stick so it can have sex with young girls to make them frigid so they can be more effective prostitutes who will not fall in love with their subjects. It's a good Republican value. No cognitive dissonance there.
Do you think Lewis Libby shares your fear of bears?
Obviously. I mean, now they're after our honey, our picnic baskets, and our women.
Our prostitutes.
Exactly. No, the bears turned them into prostitutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They were prostitutes
before
the bears got to them.
I'm sorry. I was inaccurate. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Read the book. Libby's trying to teach us a lesson here.
What is your typical workday like now?
Right now it's in around 9:30, and it started off like 9:30 in the morning to 10:30 at night, but now it's, for me at least, I'm going home around 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Do you have time to actually watch the cable shows that you're satirizing?
God, I wish I did. That's one of the things that we were talking about last Friday. Ben Carlin, who's executive producer of The Daily Show, and was also one of the executive producers on my show. John and Ben and I sat down on Friday and said, wow, we're kind of drifting a little bit away from what we intended, because I don't have time to, like, view my source material. You know, I have time to read the newspaper in the morning when I come to work. And so, you know, one of the things we don't want is for this show to be another Daily Show. This is thing has got its own flavor and its own style. And that style is based upon a different source material, which is O'Reilly or Hannity or Lou Dobbs or even Anderson Cooper. And that's what we need to use as our source material. And it's hard, because when that stuff's on, we're doing our show. So, you know, we're burning DVDs of it and passing it around and, like, holding that in our laps now instead of a newspaper to try to keep us focused.
How much writing time do you have?
Well, we try to do, you know, some stuff ahead of time, at least one act written 1 or 2 days ahead of time. Like, for instance, we're doing a threat down 2 days from now, and that's already written.
You should explain what a threat down is.
Oh, sorry. A threat down. On the show, we have the five biggest threats facing America today. And it might be things like too many Pope biopics going on TV at once, confusing people about who the real fake Pope is. Is it John Voight or is it somebody else? We don't need another Avignon schism. And big Avignon schism fans out there will love that reference. Or, you know, number one threat, bears. And so, you know, we've got one of those written for 2 days from now. You know, I came in this morning, at least one act of the show, like 5-6 minutes was written. But other than else, we're generating that day.
Even though you're kind of satirizing the media pundits who are fanning the flames of the culture wars, do you feel like you've become more of a part of it in a way that you're kind of more in the middle of that and having any more insights into it?
No. I mean, I think if the show were successful, like O'Reilly Show or like Hannity Show, it would be interesting if this show had reached the kind of popularity the Daily Show achieved with this character at the helm, because then it really would be a very odd mix. People like listening to what you said and acting on your behavior when you're giving them terrible advice. I'm looking forward to that. Then I'd understand what it's like to be one of those guys, or then I'd understand what it's like to be in the mix. But until I start affecting people, you know, with my terrible ideas, I'll never know what it's like.
Well, I'd like to end with one more interview excerpt. And this is the interview that you did with Tim Robbins when he was on the show.
That was probably one of my favorite interviews.
It was very, very brilliant. Do you want to say anything before we hear it?
All I would say about this interview was it was a ton of fun.
Stephen Colbert, thank you so much for coming back on our show. Love your show, and you know, good luck with it.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Stephen Colbert hosts The Colbert Report Monday through Thursday nights on Comedy Central right after The Daily Show. Here's Colbert with Tim Robbins.
I don't think I need to tell you. I'm really split on you, Mr. Robbins. On one hand, I think you are a true artist who, through your work, is enriching our culture. On the other side, I think your politics are killing us by inches. Okay? So I'm not exactly sure what question to lead off with here. Why don't I try to split the difference?
Okay.
What's it like working with Clint Eastwood, and why do you hate our troops?
I don't hate our troops, and...
No, Clint first.
It's great working with Mr. Eastwood. He's a great master, a Zen master. I learned a lot from him. And the second part of the question, I don't hate the troops.
Okay.
Why do you hate the truth?
What? No, I love the truth. It's facts I'm not a fan of. Now, let me ask you this. I got a quick follow-up. I mean, what was your favorite project you've ever worked on, and would you rather have Saddam in power?